This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
They have to understand that they have to listen to those people and to start a dialogue to open up the political sphere and to open up freedom of expression, freedom of speech.
That's Mohamed Anwar Sadat, president of Egypt's Reform and Development Party, on the message sent to the government by low turnout in the country's referendum. Details coming up. Also, fighting in Libya continues today as forces loyal to Commander Khalifa Haftar push nearer to the capital. And the Comoros government has shut schools, airports, and public offices today as Tropical Cyclone Kenneth passes over the islands. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Sudan's protest leaders have called for a million people to march tomorrow to demand the military give power to a civilian council. The call came after the head of Sudan's transitional military council said it would hand over power within days if civilian groups can agree on who will be a new government. Naba Mohadin reports from Khartoum.
Sudan's main protest group, the Sudanese Professionals Association, has called for a million people to take the streets on Thursday. The head of Sudan's Congress Party, which has backed the SPA in the recent protest, says the demonstrators will not accept military rule. He said, yes, they have escalatory measures. They are ready for a million-person march and preparing for a nationwide political strike. They will not give up the people's demand for a civilian government. On Tuesday, Sudan's army chief and head of the Transitional Military Council, Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah Abdurrahman Borhan, said the military would turn over power to civilians within days if the protest groups agree on the composition of a new government. Borhan made the comments during an interview with the BBC's Hard Talk program when he underscored that Sudan's troops will not attack protesters who have been camped around military headquarters since April 6. But protesters dispute Borhan's characterization that a consensus has not been reached. Protester Waddah Saleh said it could be done within 1 month if the opposition parties make a united government. The list of civilian members of government has been submitted, he says. So the ball is in the military council's court, and they should accept it within a month. The military ousted President Omar al-Bashir on April 11, after 3 decades in power and 4 months of anti-government protests. But protesters have continued their sit-in, demanding civilian rule, and not the military's announced two-year transition. Protesters Amjad Nimir say the transition period is too long, and they consider stalling by the military council to not hand over power to a civilian government immediately. Sudan's military is under international pressure to move more quickly to civilian rule. On Tuesday, the African Union gave the military a new 3-month deadline to hand over power or have Sudan's membership suspended. The bloc had earlier given the military 15 days. The visiting U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of State of African Affairs, Makele James, met separately Tuesday with the members of the military council and protest leaders. They discussed what the State Department has called the Sudanese people's legitimate demands for an inclusive civilian-led transition. The U.S. has said there will be no talks on lifting U.S. sanctions on Sudan for sponsoring terrorism until the military hands over power to a civilian administration. Naba Muhyiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Fighting in Libya continues today as forces loyal to Commander Khalifa Haftar push nearer to the capital. Haftar's Libyan National Army is fighting heavily armed militias with links to the United Nations-supported Government of National Accord based in Tripoli. The UN reported that the conflict reached a detention center holding hundreds of refugees yesterday. The UN says the center is 20 kilometers south of central Tripoli, with about 3,600 refugees and migrants held there. 5 centers are already in areas where fighting is taking place, and 6 others are close to the combat zone. Many migrants from Africa south of the Sahara Desert pass through Libya as they try to reach Europe, and more than 30,000 people have been displaced by fighting in the western part of the country. A spokesman for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called the situation in the detention centers increasingly desperate. He pointed to reports that guards are abandoning their posts, leaving people trapped in the centers which do not have drinking water. The UN's World Health Organization says 270 people, including civilians, have died in the fighting and nearly 1,300 have been injured. The Comoros government has shut schools, airports, and public offices today as Tropical Cyclone Kenneth passes over the islands with wind gusts topping 200 kilometers an hour. The storm is expected to strengthen as it heads towards the East African coast near the border between Mozambique and Tanzania. The storm comes as Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe are struggling to recover from last month's devastating cyclone Idai. Major international aid agencies have been helping with the recovery from last month's storm, and they now are preparing for Cyclone Kenneth. Daniel Timme is the spokesman for UNICEF in Mozambique. He says the storm is expected to hit Cabo Delgado province tomorrow.
So we're taking it very seriously. We are currently deploying specialists in disaster response in the fields of health and child protection, in water and sanitation.
The UN Children's Agency and other aid groups are pre-positioning emergency supplies in the area where the storm is expected to hit. Time says while Cyclone Kenneth appears to be weaker than Cyclone Idai, it remains dangerous in part because of the poverty of northern Mozambique.
Also, cyclones in that area of Mozambique are very, very rare. And so the population is not used to these events and is less resilient.
The UN Children's Agency and other aid groups are pre-positioning emergency supplies in the area where the storm is expected to hit. Time says while Cyclone Kenneth appears to be weaker than Cyclone Idai, it remains dangerous in part because of the poverty of northern Mozambique. The storm presents new challenges for the recovery effort from Cyclone Idai.
We can expect that our own efforts will be stretched, but also the efforts of other aid agencies and the government.
Cyclone Kenneth comes also as South Africa battles floods and mudslides after days of heavy rain across much of the country's east. At least 51 people have died in the country. The South African Weather Service forecasts more heavy rain and strong winds today. As the world marks World Immunization Week starting today, more children than ever are getting routine vaccinations, a record 116 million in 2017, according to the World Health Organization. Aid workers have effectively snuffed out smallpox and have come close to eradicating polio and malaria, saving countless lives in the process. But health workers are also fighting a disturbing trend of misinformation that urges people to avoid vaccination, that has created a climate of fear and ignorance, and in some rural places, violence. Such resistance, in turn, has delayed target dates for eliminating diseases, including measles, rubella, and maternal and neonatal tetanus. The WHO notes that children living in poor, marginalized areas are most affected. Health centers in the Democratic Republic of Congo have become targets of violence thanks to rumors that Ebola, which has killed 833 people since the outbreak was declared last August, doesn't exist or is part of a government plot. A doctor administering what looks to be a highly effective vaccine against Ebola was fatally shot last week. Opposition to vaccinations for religious reasons or the mistaken belief that they cause autism and carry toxic chemicals has resulted in a resurgence of measles in the United States, Mozambique, and other countries. Rebecca Martin, who directed the CDC Center for Global Health, is optimistic overall, but concerned amid outbreaks of measles, malaria, and the continuing fight against polio in Nigeria, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. She spoke with my colleague, Paul Alexander.
World Immunization Week is a moment we take in time to celebrate the work of healthcare workers, of communities, and more importantly, parents to vaccinate their children to make sure that they can live long, healthy lives.
Is it surprising to see measles reemerge, especially so widely and apparently so virulently? And is there a lesson in that?
I'm not surprised to see measles reemerging or the outbreaks that are occurring, knowing what the immunization coverage is and knowing the concerns that are out there about, we know measles is such an infectious virus, and if we don't make sure that every child is vaccinated, it will occur. And we know out there from the data that CDC works closely with the World Health Organization and countries to collect those data to know what population, what percentage of the population is or is not getting vaccinated, and where are children not getting vaccinated, and to make sure we get vaccines to them.
What would you say to the anti-vaxxers who are out there, especially given that, as you mentioned, some doctors even recommend against some specific vaccines?
The critical role that healthcare providers play in a decision for a mother or father or guardian to get a child vaccinated is critical. And we need to arm the healthcare worker with the information needed so that he or she can be a trusted partner in the discussion about vaccination and that they have the information that's needed. And this is a critical effort that must be undertaken.
You talked about trust. That has certainly become a key issue in the Ebola outbreak that's out there now. And it's something that the people on the ground have run into lots of issues with. Is there a way to build that trust? Because they haven't seemed to find the right formula so far.
This year's World Immunization Week is focusing on protecting together and the important role that parents play, but also the important role that community advocates play. Community is critical in order to be able to, you may have the best public health intervention, but if you cannot get people to accept it and to understand the importance or value of it, you will not be able to change the dynamics of an outbreak. And so the importance of engaging the community, of the value and understanding the importance of the intervention, where they have to bring culture, tradition, religion, and science together and somehow relay that and communicate that to their people in their community is critical. And we are working on those efforts to date.
And what's the potential if the vaxxer resistance grows and spreads?
We have seen the value, if you are not vaccinating, there will be disease. And we saw this in the United States in the 1980s when vaccine coverage rates were going down, outbreaks of measles were occurring. So we know from experience in many countries for many decades that value of vaccines to prevent disease and save lives. If you don't vaccinate, you will get disease. And that's with the prevention piece. As the great public health hero Bill Foege says, people don't thank you for the diseases they don't get.
That was Rebecca Martin, who directs the CDC Center for Global Health, speaking with VOA's Paul Alexander. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Sudan's protest leaders have called for a million people march tomorrow to demand the military give power to civilian council. And fighting in Libya continues today as forces loyal to Commander Khalifa Haftar push nearer to the capital. And the Comoros government has shut schools, airports, and public offices today as Tropical Cyclone Kenneth passes over the islands. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Egypt's National Election Authority says voters have approved constitutional amendments that paved the way for President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to remain in power until 2030. The head of the authority said yesterday that 88.83% of voters approved the amendments, with 44.33% turnout of eligible voters. Pro-government media, business people and lawmakers had pushed for a yes vote and high turnout. Authorities threatened to fine anyone boycotting the poll. Critics say the referendum was another step towards restoring authoritarian rule 8 years after a pro-democracy uprising toppled autocratic president Hosni Mubarak. Mohamed Anwar Sadat, president of the Reform and Development Party and a former chairman of the Human Rights Committee at the Egyptian Parliament, spoke to VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the aftermath of the referendum.
We were expecting that the final vote will be yes, although we believe that this turnout is somehow not correct in spite of all this mobilizations and all those incentives which have been offered to many people, which we all have been witnessing. But again, in my opinion, the regime and the president, they should somehow think twice about all those invalid votes and also those votes who have said no, which is in total about 4 million. They have to understand that they have to listen to those people and to start a dialogue to open up the political sphere and to open up freedom of expression, freedom of speech. A lot of things has to be done following the outcome of the referendum, you know.
But your party joined the civil democratic movement in rejecting the amendments as another step toward restoring authoritarian rule 8 years after a pro-democracy uprising that toppled autocratic President Hosni Mubarak. How would the amendments restore an authoritarian regime in Egypt?
This referendum and all these amendments, articles in the constitutions, bring back Egypt to square one, which we all thought that as from 2011, we will witness a peaceful transfer of power where we can see a president who will only last 2 terms, as it was indicated, 4 years each. The way we see it now is it's not happening. They have been extending for the current president another 2 years, and they also give him a chance to run for a third time, which is totally unacceptable. Moreover, the way we see more grab of power for the president on the judiciary, the military also being the guardians, being the protector of the civic life and political and constitution, the army is not a part of the political scene, and the army is not a political party. And giving the army the right to have veto in any elected civil president, this is something very risky. But again, the referendum is not the end of the story. There is more things to come. We are expecting to have an upper chamber, which is the Senate. So we have, as political parties, we have to think about how to run, how to get engaged in this coming Senate, and also the House of Representatives election, which will take place also in 2020. So this is not the end, although in general, we are not happy with what happened, and we have to think of tomorrow.
Thinking about tomorrow, what should the weak opposition do to avoid the mistakes that led to a parliament composed of mostly loyalist parties to the president?
They have to get together. They have to be more united. They have to be engaged with people. But of course, being engaged with people to recruit more and to have more participation on what is really happening in their daily life, it's not an easy thing, but we have to keep on pushing. And we have also to see from the regime, from the government, more access to the media, whether it's national media or private or independent. There has to be more access to all those who have different opinions, who have different positions, which is not happening nowadays in Egypt. So hopefully that the regime will realize the fact is that they cannot keep on shutting down everything from civil society to making life difficult to political parties, even to journalists or media representatives. I mean, they should somehow understand that they cannot continue the way they have been during the last couple of years.
That was Mohammed Anwar Sadat, president of the Reform and Development Party, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. Rwanda's Supreme Court has upheld the criminalization of cartoons that humiliate and defame the head of state. Its ruling also confirms adultery as a criminal offense. The two provisions of the Penal Code were challenged by an independent lawyer, Richard Mugisha. Eugene Wimana has more details from Kigali.
Professor Sam Rugege, Rwanda's Chief Justice, says freedom of expression is key in holding those in leadership to account, and that freedom should be enjoyed without any limitations. But he says defaming the head of the state has to be a criminal offense due to his office's important responsibilities. Though his arguments failed to convince the Supreme Court, lawyer Richard Mugisha is happy that he was allowed to challenge the penal code.
The decision is, first of all, the end of a process. The first thing that you have to remember is that for the first time, the court has made a ruling. This court made a ruling that anyone who has any issue with a legislation can challenge its constitutionality in the court. So that is a process that we are very happy with.
Mugisha was trying to convince the court to decriminalize defamation on the head of the state, saying that to make it a criminal, we put the president out of reach of the media. On criminalizing adultery, Justice Aloisi Chanzahile, one of five judges who ruled in the case, says the legislator wanted to protect the sanctity of the family. But she says the court decided to scrap a provision that bars an offended spouse from stopping the prosecution in a case there has been reconciliation, which she said is in everybody's interest. Judith Kanakuze, the president of Profound Chris Hamlin, says all women are happy with this ruling. We are very happy because it seems like all ideas we gave the court were executed in this ruling. Under the new code, any married person found guilty of adultery risks a jail sentence of up to 1 year. The same law prescribes a 7-year sentence and a fine of 7 million Rwandan francs for defaming the head of state. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.